ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
And good day, good night. Welcome to Soccer Today for Tuesday, June 4th, 2019. I am Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Mullins. As always, long weekend for us. We did do a Two Solitudes on Friday. So if you missed our Canadian soccer-only show, just go back to the Patreon feed last Friday. Dwayne and I talk about Canadian soccer, as we do once a week. And that show will not go away. Sometimes you'll get less soccer today. Dwayne and I are in a big part of our lives in June and July. Dwayne's covering the World Cup. I'm covering the rest of my life. And it's going to be a fun time. But how was your weekend?
Pretty good. It was a little, I watched the Champions League final. It was a nice day, actually. I watched out and about at Opera Bob's I wasn't even planning. I didn't know where I was going to go. I kind of wanted to explore the city and see what it was like now that this is this new reality of over-the-top services. And as a soccer fan, it kind of reminded me of the good old days. And I say that purposely when the Champions League final was kind of this niche thing and you had to, like, you know, knock three times and say a password to get into some sketchy bar in the middle of nowhere. It was kind of like that again, because not everyone was showing it. And people were zipping in and out, trying to find bars. And it was kind of fun to be back in a crowd that clearly was seeking it out again. But, you know, whether that's healthy for the sport overall, I don't know, Kevin. But before we get going, I did want to briefly mention a topic that's not going to be in our lineup today, because it will not be the first time that this topic will come up. I was happy to see this morning the first of probably the 1 millionth time we'll see this rumor. David Beckham apparently is going to bring Messi to Miami.
There was Suarez. There was Suarez this morning, too, that apparently Suarez received an official offer. Yeah.
I can see Suarez. Sure. Messi, he's a Barcelona One Club man. He'd come over, he'd be Gerard, too. Not that he couldn't rip the league apart, even on one leg at 38 years old. He could.
48.
But, yeah, he would walk over there, get kicked once, and go, why am I doing this?
No.
That would be that.
He shows up at, like, I don't know, okay, CenturyLink Field on a Wednesday. It's not that. We're like, we're not playing here. It's not a pitch. Yeah. Are we actually playing here? I'm not playing. Yeah, no.
Gillette.
Yeah, Foxborough. Be like,
just walk in and be like the Grandpa Simpson when he walks in, puts his hat up, turns around, walks at the door.
Yeah, that old house. But no, it's true, though. If you're Messi, no, you're not coming to MLS to go play a U.S. Open Cup game against Chattanooga FC on a Tuesday somewhere in the United States.
What is my life to come? No, yeah.
I'm retiring.
This rumor, Beckham is a smart, savvy marketing guy.
Duh.
He knows how to market an image. He will present these big-name rumors in the lead-up to the launch of that club over and over again as a marketing concept. That's all I have to say about one for now.
Ronaldo's going to be talked about. They're going to talk about all those big names, and eventually, like, Fat Ronaldo's going to sign as an ambassador for Miami or something.
I'd pay to watch him play still. He probably still could score a goal or two. The man had amazing. He was really talented.
Yeah,
I don't know,
good.
Kevin, if you're old enough to remember him as a player. You kind of had to remember the late 90s.
I do.
He's a brilliant player. But
that haircut.
Scott Ronaldo is truly what he is now. He enjoys life.
That ugliest haircut I've ever seen. Who has just a toupee and nothing else? Who has just bangs and nothing else? Ronaldo did. That's how good he was. He didn't care. He didn't give any F's about what you thought about his haircut. I guess I should do the same. Let's talk about soccer for today, Dwayne. Of course, the Champions League final was Saturday. Liverpool is now the best team in Europe, beating Spurs 2-0. Of course, controversy early on when a handball in the box gave Liverpool a penalty. And Mo Salah, of course, obliged. And late in the game, a second goal that truly killed the Spurs' momentum. They had a few chances late, but alas, it wasn't to be for Tottenham. But Liverpool, second time's the charm, I guess. If you're not going to win it one year, win it the next year.
Yeah, I mean, certainly that experience of losing the final three Real Madrid last year probably did help those guys handle the pressure of the moment. And I think it was a bit unfortunate for Spurs season to end that way. I didn't think they played much of a role in this game. The score, I think, flattered them a little bit. It was a controlled effort by Liverpool. Not a particularly entertaining game after they got the early lead. They kind of shut it down.
To be fair, I mean, polite. Because you're being really polite. Hey, well, it's kind of boring.
No, for sure. I mean, and most finals are. And I mean, a lot of people were making jokes about that during the game. And it wasn't like a game you'd see Liverpool and Spurs play in November, right, where it'd be a little more wide open. But nonetheless, look, Spurs did wonderful to get there. You know, if you're a Spurs fan waking up on Monday or Sunday morning, I guess you probably were a little disappointed and might have a feeling that you'll never get back there again. Although they have proven in this competition a few times that they've been in it, that they are a very good knockout team and they kind of cause a lot of problems for clubs. You know, I could see them kind of performing in the Champions League consistently, like a Dortmund or an Atleti, kind of that level of club. But I think Spurs absolutely could become that. But, you know, that said, Dortmund doesn't win the damn thing very often. Atleti doesn't win it. Neither one has won for a long, long time. Atleti in the 90s. Dortmund, I think, in the early 2000s got one. I have to go back and look. I'm not in front of my computer right now. But it's been a while for those clubs. It's hard for them to break through. It's hard for anyone outside of, you know, the big leagues, which obviously these clubs are in. But even beyond that, outside of the big traditional powers in those leagues. And Liverpool historically is that. And you know, every decade or so, they win this damn thing, and they got theirs in today. Are they the best team in the world?
No, probably not. They're not the best team in England. So, but yeah, that's
yeah,
the thing.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
It's hard for me to say that without coming off as bitter. But
I know, that's why I'm saying it.
It's debatable. Yeah, I mean, certainly they're deserving of a title this year. Had they not won a trophy, it would have been, I think, undoubtedly the best team in history to have not won a trophy in the season, right? And whether or not they can sustain that next year, we'll see. Yeah. It sets up a fascinating Premier League for 2020, for sure, 2019, 2020. And, you know, August is a ways off now. We've got some other stuff to focus on first. Look, in terms of the penalty, I can argue either side of that debate. I know a lot of Liverpool fans will be insistent that it was clearly a penalty. It did hit his hand, and his hand was slightly away from his body. So, you know, you can make that argument. I have never particularly liked penalty calls like that. The penalty is sort of the punishment is disproportionate to the crime, so to speak, but yeah, that's a debate that is useless to have because that's just the rule. I can also see the argument for a little bit of looking the other way at 1 minute into the Champions League final when a ball is clearly more hitting the hand than the hand hitting the ball. And sure, that's your debate and how it goes down to. But you know, and I think the other part of this too is Spurs fans might feel a little aggrieved that under the changes, the slight tweaks of the rules that are coming into play, there's an argument to be made that it wouldn't be called a day later. But alas, it was.
Yeah, it was, and it was called, and it was a goal, and it was a winning goal for Liverpool. But you mentioned how important it was for Liverpool to win a trophy, a team that had an amazing season, 97 points. They did deserve a trophy, but Spurs, it's kind of a, not of a shame, but it's kind of sad in a way that Spurs were able to have a very good season, especially a great run in the Champions League, and still, like every Spurs season, no trophies.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to invoke their great rival manager of many, many years in Arsene Wenger here, and, you know, he used to say, like, unironically, he'd talk about, you know, fourth place being as good as an FA Cup, as good as a League Cup. And he was, you know, criticized for that because fans want to see shiny things held up with ribbons on them, right? And I fall on that side of the debate, but there is a strong argument to be made that it's, you know, is Spurs making the Champions League for 2019-20 more important than, you know, having a day at Wembley in the end of February and winning a League Cup? I mean, it depends on your perspective, and that's where you're coming down for. But there's no way, you know, on God's green earth, you can say that Spurs had an unsuccessful season within the context of their history. But it's got to be frustrating for any of those clubs that are at the level of Spurs, at the level of even Chelsea and Arsenal now, to look at Liverpool and City and look at the value and, you know, let's not pretend Liverpool does not spend money. Their net spend is about $180 million over the past couple of years, £100 million, pardon me, over the past couple of years. So
like,
they
spent
a lot of money.
The most expensive Liverpool team in the history, like by far. This is like the most money Liverpool ever spent on soccer players.
They bought the Champions League, just like every team ever buys their trophies, because that's how it's a commodity. Players, and you have to buy them.
So while Dwayne is ducking covering because Liverpool fans are throwing things at him at the moment, while he's taking care of himself, let's just continue and talk about TFC for a bit. Dwayne, the news that we talked about for a while, a few weeks, almost a month ago, before May 8th, when the first primary window closed, we're like, yeah, Gonzalez to TFC. We were told close to done. Apparently it was, but now it is. It is done. And July 9th around so, he'll be available for DFC.
Yeah, well, what it was done back then is the bottom line here. And what happened was that the club that he had been loaned to refused to end the loan agreement, and they wanted him to play out on the last month. So, you know, they had no stake in the game. So you kind of get their perspective, is that why would we give up this loan agreement? We're not getting a transfer fee. It's not that it would have been a huge transfer fee to Atlas, but, you know, TFC was willing to pay them a little bit of something to get him a month early, because they recognized how concerning the back line had been. And they wanted to, you know, it says everything right there, actually. The TFC, rather than just wait to do it in the summer, was willing to pay a transfer fee for 1 month. I don't know what that fee would have been. We never got disclosed on that. But even if we're spending $100,000, that's still like, that's, they're recognizing that there's a problem at the back. I mean, you don't have to be particularly adept at analyzing football to appreciate that there's a problem at the back of TFC. But
especially the last lost 4 out of 5 or something like that.
Yeah, well, they've 2 draws in the last 5.
Okay.
It's
2 draws, 2 losses.
Yeah, they got the late draw, the own goal in Vancouver in the 90-something minute. But it's been a problem. But look, in terms of what the signing means, there are a lot of TFC fans that are perhaps a little entitled after a couple years near the top, that feel that every signing should be this slam dunk that immediately steps in and has no questions behind it and is getting everyone excited and has a bit of name recognition and marketing power as well. That is just not the reality of MLS signings, particularly when you have 3 DPs already on the market. And, you know, this is likely a TAM level signing, but nonetheless, it's still never going to have the same impact that a DP signing would. So really, when you look at what's available for TFC out there, you look at realistically who they can attract. They are not the top team in MLS anymore. This is not a case of a Victor Vasquez coming in and finishing off a championship team. This is trying to fill a hole in a struggling, middling team. We'll call them middling. I think that's probably fair.
Yeah.
I started well, not doing so well now. This is not the same as it was in 2017. This is 2019. And to get a player of Omar Gonzalez's with Omar Gonzalez's resume, we'll say, is a good get for them. Is it a slam dunk? No. There's some concerns about how he played in Mexico. But what I'll say to those concerns, beyond the obvious fact, is that we need to see how he actually plays for TFC before we, you know, criticize or praise him overly. But what I will say about his struggles in Mexico is we're talking about a vastly different league in terms of style.
Yeah. Good players. We're talking about very good attackers coming at you every single game and relentlessly.
Kind of attackers too.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Like
in MLS, you're going to be dealing with a lot of big men. You're going to be dealing with more crosses. You're going to be dealing with a lot of stuff like that. I think also great in the air. Was great at dealing with big, strong, physical MLS defenders when he was in MLS. So
remember when he was Defender of the Year? Was it 2015? 2016? I think it was 2015.
Yeah.
It might be 2014. It was that time period from 2014 to 16 with the LA Galaxy, the end of the Robbie Keane era and the Bruce Arena era with the LA Galaxy. Omar Gonzalez was dominant in the center back position when he was dealing with crosses, with aerial balls, when he was dealing on set pieces. He was a key to the success of the Galaxy in the defensive side in the 2014, 13, and that time period. So coming back in Major League Soccer with, of course, a different type of team and Toronto and a different setup, but in a role that could be similar and you could highlight his, I would say, his best part of his game, trying to focus on his strength and hide his weaknesses a bit. And I think he'll be better for Toronto than performances they had from other center backs this year, to not mention Larrasima.
Yeah, I mean, Samal, I think it's we've talked about him way too much, really, honestly. He's clearly lost a lot of steps and is clearly maybe a backup option. He's a good depth option, I think, because he still has the free kick in. I mean, maybe you can bring him on late as almost an offensive weapon. I think that's how you use him the rest of the year, and then maybe look to get out of the contract at the end of the year, which is, you know, unfortunate, but that's the reality of the business he's chosen to be in. I look at Gonzalez and I look at Mavinga and I look at Moore, who is still a decent defender, although we saw in the Vancouver game how he doesn't have the quickness that maybe he had a few years ago when the Vancouver attacker beat him and forced him into the penalty that gave Vancouver the lead that they couldn't hold on to. I like the idea of Gonzalez in the middle with Moore and Mavinga on either side of him, because I think Moore offers a very leadership, cognitive sort of game, can organize, can help keep people in line. Mavinga is very athletic and quick and sort of can back up, and Gonzalez is very strong in the air. And I think if you do that and then go back to the TFC's successful three-man back or five-man back, depending on how you want to define it, that they won the MLS Cup with, you might have something going on there, right? And I think that's kind of the approach that you probably will see out there. And then you look at Samal and the nifty nephew as that's Zabaleta. Zabaleta, not Zabaleta, Zabaleta. I'm mixing them up in my head now. It'd be fun if it was Zabaleta.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say, you're mixing him up in your head because your heart wants Zabaleta so bad. But you're stuck with the V and not the B.
Yes. It was funny when City played TFC, they Zabaleta traded shirts, obviously. Anyway.
Obviously. That's so amazing. Oh, who writes this stuff? That's like an Easter egg in a movie. That's awesome.
TFC went, we got a good player whose name is Zabaleta. Would you like to trade shirts with him? And Zabaleta went,
What? Someone was holding his hand. Okay, here's my shirt.
You can keep his. I'll give you mine.
Who are you? Okay, here you go.
Anyway, look, that's your backup options there. I think that this is TFC going back to what they were successful with. I like the signing in theory. I'll pump the brakes ever so slightly. You know, this is not MLS Cup, here we come type stuff, but it does address a major, major hole.
But it could be a playoff game. It could bring you to the playoff.
Still think they're a playoff team in terms of their overall quality. I mean, add this, I'm not. If he plays to the level that he played when he was in MLS earlier, then with the right addition up front, because they do still need to add dynamic width, then absolutely TFC can be a second half team. And they haven't fallen along. No one is well behind in the East because no one has taken the East by the horns. That's, you know, New York and Atlanta's slow start combined with no one else willing to take that rein and like really go means that the East is still pretty wide open if someone can get on a roll in the second half. So that's, you know, it's not inspiring because the East isn't inspiring this year, but it is the best move under the circumstances that TFC can make right now. I believe they had to address this. It's a failure of their build that they had to address this before they dealt with the width. I think going into the season, they thought, oh, we just need to tweak this and we're a championship contending team if we can just bring some dynamic width in. Now they had to go and spend in a big way to bring in the center back, which means that the width players that they can go in are going to be riskier, are going to be less well-known. I truly believe that some of those rumors early on were real. Not necessarily the Robin one, but other, like the guy that was in the Russian league and things like that. But then when they looked at their backline, they went, no, we can't spend there. We've got to adjust our budget and calculate spending in the middle of the defense. And that's a failure of the build, but it's not a failure of the plug right now, in my opinion. And now we just wait and see.
We'll do an old school Canadian review. We don't necessarily have the time today to go through the entire MLS results from the weekend and the Canadian Premier League. We'll talk about more of the Canadian Premier League on Thursday on the Two Solid Dudes Soccer Podcast. But Friday, of course, Vancouver, Toronto were playing each other, finished 1-1 with two late goals in this game. Penalty for Vancouver, an own goal for Toronto, which was scored by Vancouver, finished 1-1. But in this game, what I thought was interesting is Vancouver was trying to create. Now Vancouver's unbeaten in seven. Vancouver's turning things around. Wins are not easy, but at least they're getting a point at a time, which is better than before. And slowly you're start to see creativity coming into the midfield. Mbom is starting to be influential and getting very dangerous looks and just being off a few inches at times. I think the ship is being righted in Vancouver. Toronto, it's a weird time for Toronto. Good beginning and then not that great, but they're not leaking as many goals as they were a few weeks ago too. So it's like both teams are a bit in the same spot where they're getting close to close or in the playoff spot, and things are not great, but they're not that bad either.
Yeah, I've spoken to Toronto quite a bit already. You know, in terms of both of the teams, what I watched on Friday night were two teams that just could not break the other down. And, you know, on TFC's front, I think you do have to couch that a little bit in the fact that Michael Bradley, once again, wasn't in the lineup. He has been missing for the last two games. That corresponded with Pozuelo coming back into the lineup after his red card. Josie finally getting healthy. We have yet to see. It has been about 6 weeks since we last saw all three of them in the lineup at the same time. And I think that's how they're built, that, you know, they're reliant upon the health of their DPs. And when they go down, then there's going to be problems. And that's a choice they made in the build, and it worked in 2017. Obviously they had Vasquez as a fourth one kind of in there too. Right.
So yeah, don't forget that in terms of Vasquez, who might've been the most important of the four for like the system that Vanny was playing. But anyways,
yeah, I mean, they could have been the MLS Cup champion in 2016. I mean, they're penalty shooter away, but they weren't definitively the best team. They added Vasquez. They were definitively the best team in 27. I mean, there's no debating that, right? So that he clearly was a valuable piece. And
but you would be wrong. Like, there's always a possibility of a debate, but you would be wrong. That's the thing.
I'm sure that if I go into
Big Soccer,
Big Soccer, or an Impact bar after several beers, I would get a debate of that TFC was clearly the best team in 2017. But those people would be arguing from either insanity in Big Soccer's case or partisanship in the Impact fan case, right? Like, it wouldn't be rational.
I like that you say insanity, but for Big Soccer, because that used to be the case. It used to be a lot of dangerous thing on that form.
Still there. I haven't been there in years.
I don't think I've been there in like five.
Sweet on Goal. If you want to look me up, you can search for Post by Sweet on Goal. It's probably been 5 or 6 years since I last posted on there, though.
No, you did. You posted something like last year, so it's not that long.
Yeah.
Anyways, with the Impact a bit, Dwayne. The Impact, Nacho Piatti gone for 8 to 12 weeks. Bakary Sagna left the game around the 30th minute, and I saw him in an air cast in crutches walking up stairs to get back to Stade Saputo, some of the rooms over there, and to meet other players and talk later on after the game. So injury concerns. There's a lot of players leaving for the Gold Cup, for friendlies in Finland, where Euro qualifiers for Finland, Jukka Raitala, and of course Piet and Zachary Brogiard are now with Team Canada. Daniel Lovitz is going to play a friendly with the United States in a few days' time. So now that there's about 13 players available for the Montreal Impact, but the good news is there's about 13 players available for the Sounders tomorrow night too. So at least the Impact has an opponent that is in a similar situation. But this loss on Saturday, that 3-0, that loss, first words Remy Gault said, Dwayne, when he sat down on Saturday after the game in front of us, the media. Like, okay, Remy Gault, what's your thought? Like, yeah, not good. He's like, no, it's not the right word. I'm ashamed. I've lost bigger games, 5-1, 7-1. But this one stays with me. I've seen things that I don't like. Egotistical attitude, lack of respect between my own players. So, yeah, it was It was an interesting game. But, yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say that with the impact, I think that there are a lot of this league is suffering from injuries this year, and that has to do with the condensed schedule, I'm pretty sure. Impact a lot of travel in the early part of the year. But, again, just like Toronto, as I said a minute ago, like it's not like they're out of touch. The right moves, the right getting healthy at the right time.
They're
it's
third in the East. They're third or fourth in the East. Like they would host a playoff game if the playoff was started right now.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing about the East, and this goes for not just Montreal and Toronto, but every team outside of maybe like Cincinnati, the bottom teams there. But in terms of like probably 7 or 8 teams in the East, you can make an argument for that if you add the right piece in the summer window, you get hot at the right time in the summer window, they could be an MLS Cup. Absolutely. Now, I think that MLS Cup's going to be in LA, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
So,
Bank of California.
Start saving your money out if you think your team's going to be that one to take the flight out there. And I'm not sure anyone's stopping that team. So,
no,
there you go.
But I might be going to Bank of California in November. That would be fun. On that note, you can follow Dwayne on Twitter at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Larme, and the show at Soccer Today SPN. Thank you for your patience over the last couple of days when we're not able to do a show. It's going to happen once or twice a week going forward. Mondays and Fridays are up for discussion, but the rest should be normal. Two Solitudes will be always on Thursdays, and you can follow us on social media to make sure you are aware of when we are doing a show, and you always get the show live on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN. We'll be back tomorrow with another show talking about the world of football with a soccer perspective. But until tomorrow, as always, thank you for your time, your support, your listens, and thank you. And have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.